For God's sake, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the deaths of kings, how some have been deposed, some slain in war.
Ay me, I see the ruin of my house. The tiger now hath seized the gentle hind. Insulting tyranny begins to jut upon the innocent and aweless throne.
What is a man? Sure he made us with such large discourse, looking before and after, gave us not that capability and godlike reason to fust in us unused.
O my dear father, restoration hang thy medicine on my lips, and let this kiss repair those violent harms that my two sisters have in thy reverence made.
I am a king that find thee, and I know 'tis not the balm, the sceptre and the ball, the sword, the mace, the crown imperial, the throne he sits on, nor the pomp that beats on the high shore of the world.
This is the mighty history of the British Empire, a people living on a tiny island in the North Atlantic Ocean. Built an empire that circled the earth and brought freedom and education to languishing millions. This empire was blessed by Almighty God and one of his best educated teachers, William Shakespeare. Shakespeare has educated some of the greatest leaders of all time, such as Abraham Lincoln and Winston Churchill.
We shall never surrender.
Our troubled world needs a fresh crew of nation-building leaders. Are you ready to step up to the challenge? Welcome to the exciting classroom of Shakespeare's Royal Education with host Dennis Leap.
Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome back to Shakespeare's Royal Education. Well, I don't have any written comments, but my daughter, who has been traveling through the Southeast with Celtic Throne, and a lot of people that are listening to me on the radio gave her comments about how much they love Shakespeare. And so whoever you are out there that have been making those comments to my daughter, thank you. And I love Shakespeare, and I know from what you've said to my daughters, you also love Shakespeare. And so there is a lot to learn with William, and it's always going to make us better people the more we know and understand and how to read some tough writing. It can be tough sometimes. So anyway, thank you for all those nice comments, but it would be nice if you write them to me, too. I'd like to have that. Now, on our last program, I went back to Act 1, Scene 3. And again, it seems like when I produce the program or I put it together, and then when I start to give it, I thought, oh, I missed this. Oh, I missed that. Oh, we better cover that. So I'm trying to give you the best education you can get with it. So I went back to Act 1, Scene 3, and we discussed John Gaunt's instruction to his son Bolingbroke on page 25. Now, we're not going to go back to that today. But again, just if you just put a little noggin, a note in your noggin, and when you're reading this, and, you know, and you want to study it and go back through it, just go back to page 25. And when you go to lines 275 to 293, It's John of Gaunt is giving a really great solution to his son, who is absolutely disgusted and discouraged that he's got banished from England. And John tells him, well, turn this around and make it fun. Essentially, that's what he says. You know, he says, you never know. And he was banished to France. I mean, that wasn't a bad place to be banished to. And he said, essentially, he would have all the freedom he needed. He could go all, he could keep going east if he wanted to. And he said, just enjoy it. Now, this discussion takes place immediately after his son is banished by his cousin, Richard II, for 6 years. So he was banished by his own cousin. And if you look at the history, their grandfather, their great-grandfather, I guess, was Edward, and Edward actually knighted them both at the same time, and so they were actually close cousins at one time. And so So surely that would have discouraged Bolingbroke as well. Now, as I was just saying, these lines are John's instruction to his son on how to go through his tough trial. And all of us go through tough trials, and sometimes we let them get us down instead of just rolling with them. Eventually, we'll come out of them. And that's what John was trying to get across to his son. Now, I also discussed Act 1, Scene 4, which reveals a meeting between King Richard, his cousin, Lord Armoral, and remember, these are all cousins, and he also had his friends there, Bagot and Green, and they all got together and had a little meeting after Bolingbroke had departed from England. Now, page 28 shows that it is Green who recommends the king that he forget about his banished cousin Bolingbroke, and then place his full attention on dealing with the rebellious Irish. And so we know from discussions that I gave you last time is that King Richard was really doubtful if Bolingbroke would actually stick to his banishment. And so he's kind of in the background. He's worried about, well, what did I do with this guy? And Bolingbroke is really kind of a beefy guy. He's strong, you know, and King Richard is kind of a skinny guy. So he's probably afraid he's going to get beat up if Bolingbroke, does not obey his banishment. But he's got these favorites around him. One of them is his cousin Armoral, and we are going to talk about Armoral, not this time, but probably next time. But Green, and you know, there's Bushy, Bagot, and Green, and they're all his buddies, and they all have the same temperament. They all are into clothes and crazy music and perverted poems and all that. So they're like the renegade buddies. And anyway, the king does agree, and he says he will go to Ireland personally. And so he's taking, remember now, here he's got his great uncle, John of Gaunt, who's trying to give him all the direction he needs to be a great king. He doesn't want to listen to it, but he'll listen to his buddies, Baggy, Bush, and Green. And, it's not a good thing. You've got to learn to listen to your elders. And, so many young kids today, even they're rebellious. They rebel against their parents, and they follow their young friends, and they end up getting tattoos and smoke pot and get arrested and all that stuff. So, the king says, okay, yep, let's go to Ireland. And so one of the things that King Richard really, really needs, he needs money if he's going to fight a war with Ireland. And Richard, he does have enough sense that he recognizes and states that England's coffers are grown somewhat light. Essentially what that means is there aren't any coffers. They're gone because he's already wasted them all. And then he goes on and he says, well, we are enforced to farm our royal realm. And again, we've read some of this before, but I have a little bit of a different bent on it this time. He says, by this he means he would tax the common people and make loans to the crown on which the amount was left empty to be filled by the king's agents. Now, I don't know if I explained that well enough the last time, but essentially what he's doing is he's making loans from the people. But the people don't know he's making the loans because he's sending his agents out to determine which citizens were very wealthy, and then they would just take large sums of gold from them. So that's like he's borrowing money from the rich people, but the rich people don't know he's borrowing it. They're just taking it from them. So you can see that there is a criminality to King Richard. And, you know, it's like me sending, well, yeah, I want to buy this car. And so I go to my brother and say, hey, could I have can I have the password to your bank account? You know, I need about $5,000 to buy that car. So anyway, what Shakespeare is doing here is he's giving us a look at King Richard, but he's also giving us a look at Bolingbroke. And the thing is that they're two different people, but they both have their problems. And and you're going to see that as it comes up here. So today what I want to do is I want to continue with Act 2, Scene 1, and I'm going to begin on page 29. Now, Act 2 is probably one of the longest acts in the play. So we're probably going to be stuck on Act 2 for a little while. But it's a very important act, and there are new characters introduced here that are going to come up, in the rest of the play, and then they will be coming up when we do the play Henry IV. These characters are going to continue on in both of those plays. And so essentially what I want to do here is I want to show you that the lines I want to read. We're going to start on page 29. Some of it we've read before, but these lines reveal the importance of John of Gaunt's younger brother, York. And remember now, he is also an uncle of Richard. And now he's not, when I say he's the younger brother, that doesn't mean he's young in age. It's just they were younger. One was born first, the other one was born. But the thing with York is he is different than his older brother, but he is still a wise uncle that Richard does not want to obey. And so we all know that John of Gaunt died. I mean, he dies. And York essentially assumes John of Gaunt's dominant role in King Richard's reign. And so in other words, Richard was so happy to get rid of John of Gaunt, but then York is going to step in. Now, remember this, as I said last time, Shakespeare reveals his Bible insight side through the character Gaunt and his lines on page 25, 29, 30, and 31. So I think, if you really want to really enjoy this play, go back and read those lines. Read what Gaunt has to say. And, it's good memory work. You know, if you want to be like Winston Churchill, who could memorize all kinds of Shakespeare, he could memorize plays. Also, Abraham Lincoln loved Shakespeare's plays, and he would memorize things from them. And so that's all good education. So, anyway, I'm not going to go back through those Gaunt lines again. I just wanted to let you know you could go to page 25, 29, 30, and 31, and you can find them all. But what I want to do now is I want to discuss the introduction of a new character into the play, and that is on page 35. And again, you could look it over, but not realize that this is Shakespeare is also setting us up not only for this play but for the next play as well. And Northumberland appears briefly in this play, but then he's going to have a dominant role when we get into Henry IV. And so it really is interesting. So here at the top of the page 35, let's see, maybe we could just look at page 34 for a minute. This is where Gaunt, he was really sick, and he and Richard had their thing. And, Gloucester is eventually, he says to him, Gaunt says to Richard, just convey me to bed, then to my grave. And this is at the middle of page 34. Love they to live that love and honor have. And so he's off the scene. And then the king says, and let them die that age and solace have, for both that hast thou, and both become the grave. So essentially, the king is saying, yeah, let him die. But then notice what York says, and It's very interesting here. York says, I do beseech your majesty impute his words to wayward sickliness and age in him. He loves you on my life and holds you dear, as Harry Duke of Hereford were he here. And so essentially what you're seeing is Gaunt is not afraid to tell the king what he thinks directly. He's going to just say it. But York, again, being a good younger brother, he's trying to defend Gaunt for what he said. And he says to the king, I do beseech your majesty, impute his words to wayward sickliness and age in him. And so he said, look, he's sick, he's older, you know, just forgive him, don't get upset with him. He loves you on my life and holds you dear as Harry Duke of Hereford were he here. And so the thing is now Harry Duke of Hereford is the cousin he banished. And he's saying, look, even Harry Duke of Hereford loved you. And the king says to him is, right you say true, as Hereford's love, so his, as theirs, so mine, and all be as it is. Now, the king says, okay, you know, I understand. Yeah, he was dying. He's sick. Yeah, we'll just forget it all. But now, there's another new character that enters, and it says there at the bottom of page 34, enter Northumberland. And then we go to the top of page 35, it's Northumberland says, my liege, old Gaunt commends him to your majesty. And so it's not really clear what he's saying there, and the king doesn't get it. And the king says, what says he? And Northumberland says, nay, nothing, all is said. His tongue is now a stringless instrument. Words, life, and all, old Lancaster hath spent. And so in other words, he's dead. And so Northumberland now comes out, and he says that. Now, what's interesting, and we're going to continue with this in just a minute, but what Northumberland is, his real name is Henry Percy. And he lived around the years 1341 to 1408. He was Marshal of England. He was created Earl of Northumberland at Richard II's coronation in 1377. And so here's a servant of Richard the second. And if you look in history, and that's why I just got online and looked up the history, he served Richard in numerous capacities. And we're going to see Henry Percy and the Percy family really come to the foreground in Henry IV. You know, this little bit of history says, but as we will learn after the year 1398, the Percy family supported the Duke of Hereford, and that would be Bolingbroke. But this is, they support him after he becomes Henry IV. And again, if you just, I mean, I'm not going to be, it's not like I'm telling trade secrets here. It's just that we know that Bolingbroke is going to come back. And I can tell you when he's going to come back. He comes back when the king goes to Ireland, which makes a lot of sense because he doesn't have to fool with the king because he's stuck in Ireland. Now, there's a lot more to that that we'll be getting into. But again, as we will learn, this is the history, he says, but as we will learn after the year 1398, the Percy family supported the Duke of Hereford after he becomes Henry IV and takes a prominent part in Richard's abdication. So here we go. Richard is afraid that Bolingbroke is going to come back and it's going to be trouble for him. Well, it's a lot's going to happen. And, there's a little bit more that we want to get through in here that is going to help you to see what's going to happen. Okay, so here, Northumberland, again, I'll just repeat this. Nay, nothing at all is said. His tongue is now a stringless instrument. Words, life, and all old Lancaster hath spent. Now, look who responds immediately. It's York. And he says, be York the next that must be bankrupt so... though death be poor, and it ends a mortal woe. And so what is York really saying there? And remember now, he's a younger brother, and he had a lot of respect for his brother John of Gaunt. What York is saying there, he says, be York the next that must be bankrupt. So in other words, what he's really saying is, oh no, I'm stuck with Richard. That's what he's saying. I'm stuck with him, and now I'm going to be bankrupt. You know, this kid's going to kill me, kind of thing, by what he does. And so, it's he says, oh man, this is going to end in mortal woe. Now, Gaunt died in the year 1399. Just I have that right there in my notes, so you can see some of these years. Now, here's what the king responds. He says, the ripest fruit first falls, and so doth he. His time is spent. Our pilgrimage must be. And then he goes, so much for that. So that's all he wants to say about his uncle that died, and was his uncle that actually got him on the throne, if you look at history. And he said, oh, so much for that. And he goes, now for our Irish wars. This is the king. He says, we must supplant those rough, rugged-headed kerns. Hey, that's my relatives he's talking about. And my great-great-grandfather from Ireland has the recalcitrant lions in his coat of arms. So he has something to do with King David. It's obvious there. And I always got really frustrated with my parents why they didn't give me an Irish forename instead of Dennis. What does Dennis mean to Ireland? Nothing. You know, it's like, is that French name? I don't know what kind of name that is. But I did find out that my great-grandfather's name was a good Irish name. And so that was great. Anyway, but he said, we must supplant those rough, rug-headed kerns. You know, there's a lot of people in Ireland have red hair. And he's picking on red hair. I don't have red hair. I have light blonde hair. He says, which live like venom where no venom else, but only they have privilege to live. And for these great affairs to ask some charge towards our assistance, we do seize to us the plate, coin, revenues, and movables wherever Uncle Gaunt did stand possessed. So this is like the future coming true for York. He can't believe what he just heard. So essentially what Richard says, we're taking everything from Bolingbroke. We're taking everything from Uncle John of Gaunt. We're taking his gold. We're taking whatever has value, whatever is in this estate. He said, we're going to take it. And York says, he comes on to say, this is still page 35. How long shall I be patient? Oh, how long shall tender duty make me suffer wrong? Not Gloucester's death, nor Hereford's banishment, nor Gaunt's rebukes, nor England's private wrongs, nor the prevention of poor Bolingbroke, and about his marriage, nor my own disgrace have ever made me sour my patient cheek, or bend one wrinkle on my sovereign's face. So here's a little bit of history that Shakespeare, he kind of puts it in there, but he doesn't really define it. But essentially, Bolingbroke had the opportunity to marry one of the daughters of the King of France. And Richard blocked it. He blocked the marriage. He didn't want him to marry one of the French. Now remember, King Richard was actually raised in France. And if you go back to the earlier plays we've been talking about, we know that King John, he owned land in France. And so the English did have land in France, and the English and the French did work together. And so it was Richard that forestalled Bolingbroke marriage to the daughter of the King of France. And so what York is saying is, you've been nothing but a problem to this family, Richard. why are you treating them so badly? And then York continues now on page 36. He says, I am the last of noble Edward's sons, of whom thy father, the Prince of Wales, was first. And war was never lion raged more fierce. So he's talking about, you know, Edward. This is, you know, this was his King Richard's father. And, of course, Edward was the son of an Edward as well. It says, in war was never lion raged more fierce. In peace was never gentle lamb more mild than was the young and princely gentleman. His face thou hast, for even so looked he. So here is York. He's looking at Richard and said, you know, you look just like your dad. And his dad was called the Black Prince, by the way. And so he was a great warrior. And he said, you look just like him. He says, accomplished with the number of thy hours, but when he frowned, it was against the French, not against his friends. His noble hand did win what he did spend, and spent not that which his triumphant father's hand had won. His hands were guilty of no kindred blood, but bloody with the enemies of his kin. O Richard, York is too far gone with grief, or else he never would compare between. And so, you know, York is really, he's really emotionally disturbed by all of this, that he's going to go in there and just take everything. And it's really, John of Gaunt is dead, so all of that money and the estate would go on to Bolingbroke, to his cousin. The king says, why, uncle, what's the matter? And York says, now look at how honorable he is. He refers to Richard as my liege. He says, oh, my liege, pardon me if you please. If not, I pleased not to be pardoned, am content with all. So he said, look, pardon me, but if you don't want to pardon me, that's fine, I'll deal with it. Seek you to seize and gripe into your hands the royalties and rights of banished Hereford. Is not Gaunt dead? And doth not Hereford live? Was not Gaunt just? And is not Harry true? And he's talking about his uncle and his cousin. And he said, these are honest men. And he said, did not the one deserve to have an heir? Is not his heir a well-deserving son? Take Hereford's rights away, and take from time his charters and his customary rights. So he's talking about money. He's talking about he's inherited wealth, and you're going to take that all away from him? He says, let not tomorrow then ensure today. Be not thyself, for how art thou a king, but by fair sequence and succession. Now, afore God, God forbid I say true, if you do wrongly seize Hereford's rights, call in the letters, patents that he hath, by his attorneys general to sue his livery and deny his offered homage, you pluck 1,000 dangers on your head, and you lose 1,000 well-disposed hearts, and prick my tender patience to those thoughts which honor and allegiance cannot think. And so now York would never call himself a prophet. And this is what his older brother said, methinks me a prophet. But what he's giving Richard, this is a really biting York warning. If you take that money, you're going to put yourself in big danger. And the king says, and it's a typical of King Richard, think what you will, we seize into our hands his plate, his goods, his money, and his lands. So the king wouldn't even listen to it. He said, and it's like, you know, like I said in a previous program, I had this, one of my favorite uncles was Uncle Bud. And, you know, he was a really, really fun uncle to be around. I know he caught my older brother smoking, and he said, you guys shouldn't be smoking. And then one of my cousin Jerry Leap, that was his name. His name was Gerald, but Jerry, he said, Dad, you smoke. He says, don't what I do. I remember I was sitting there, because I would listen to my Uncle Bud, because he would always try and console me, because I had bigger brothers that would beat me up sometimes. And then, of course, my dad, you know, I was different than than what my dad expected me to be, I guess. I was into books and art and stuff like that. And my dad was on the railroad, and he wanted me to be on the railroad, become a Republican and be on the railroad. And I said, Dad, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. So anyway, it's just really, really, really interesting. So here he's giving him a warning, and it's essentially what I'm leading you to see is that York is actually taking John of Gaunt's place in Richard's life, and he knows that he's not going to give up on him, but he's going to stick with it. And then the king says, think what you will, we seize into our hands his plate, his good, his money, and his lands. Now that's poetry. That's really perfect poetry. That's a rhyming couplet that Shakespeare is so good at. York says, I'll not be by the while, my liege, farewell. What will ensure here of there's none can tell, but by bad courses may be understood that their events can never fall out good. And so now, and essentially now York is giving a prophecy. he's not saying he's a prophet, but look, that their events can never fall out good. This is not going to go good. And the king says, now he's talking to his buddies that are there. He says, go Bushy to the Earl of Wiltshire Strait. Bid him repair to us to Ely House. Now, one of the things I need to correct is I said that Ely House was John of Gaunt's house in Lancaster. And the point is, that's not true. The Ely House was the Bishop of Ely's house in London. And so I'll correct that error right now. So the king said, look, he doesn't want to hear what his uncle has to say. So he said, let's go to Ely House, or this is where the Bishop of Ely's house. He said, to see this business tomorrow next, we will for Ireland, and 'tis time, I trow. And we create an absence of ourselves, our Uncle York, Lord Governor of England, for he is just and always loved us well. Come on, our queen, tomorrow must we part. Be merry, for our time of stay is short. So York left with his prophecy, and then here's what Richard says. He said, okay, we're going to make Uncle York Lord Governor of England while we're gone. So in other words, this is his way of putting a chain around his neck, saying he can't leave. He's now Governor of England while I'm gone. And so then exited then was the king, the queen, Armorall, Bushy, Green, and Bagot. And then it goes on to say, Northumberland then is still there with Willoughby and Ross. Northumberland says, well, lords, the Duke of Lancaster is dead. And these are three other big figures with Northumberland. So Northumberland is talking about the Duke of Lancaster, and he says to Ross, living too, for now his son is Duke. So what Northumberland is saying is, look, John of Gaunt is dead, but now Bolingbroke is now Duke of Lancaster. And, you know, by the time we're in this part of the play, even though, you know, with the play, time is condensed, it's like this is a year has passed since Bolingbroke was banished. And so by the time of this play, so this one part of the play is actually February 1399. And so now Bolingbroke is Duke. And so that really changes everything. Now Willoughby, he's another noble. He says, barely in title, not in revenues. So Northumberland says, richly in both, if justice had her right. So here these two noblemen are saying, hey, you know, Harry Bolingbroke this is his estate. This is his property. This is his money. And, you know, they're saying this isn't right. He says, my heart is great, meaning swollen, but it must break with silence, ere be disburdened with a liberal tongue. So if you look at these men, they're noblemen, and if Richard's going to take his cousin's estate and money, when do they have to fall as well? And that's what they're thinking. And says Northumberland then says, nay, speak thy mind, and let them never speak more that speaks thy words again to do thee harm. And then Willoughby says, tend that thou wouldst speak to the Duke of Hereford. If it be so, out with it boldly, man. Quick is mine ear to hear good towards him. So here is now the whole situation with the King Richard. And I've said this before. He's going to Ireland. And the point is, why, after he banished Bolingbroke, and there he's concerned that he might return before his time is up. And here what you have now is you have the nobles wanting to get in touch with Bolingbroke to bring him back, because the king is going to be where? He's going to be in Ireland. And so that just, this what Richard did, being so arrogant, he just set himself up to have more trouble. So Northumberland just says, now, afore God, till shame, such wrongs are born. In him a royal prince, and many more of noble blood in this declining land. The king is not himself, but basely led by flatterers, and what they will inform merely in hate against any of us all, that will the king severely prosecute against us, our lives, our children, and our heirs. And so you can see that Northumberland sees, look, it's like Richard is a woke leader, and he's got these company of woke supporters around him, and they're saying this is absolutely dangerous for the nation. And if you really look at this carefully, it's the same thing that's going on in the United States. We have a bunch of woke leaders in charge, and they don't care who they upset, they don't care who they offend, they're going to do what they want to do. And but look what can happen to a nation. And England was really struggling at this time. He said, then Ross, he's another nobleman, he says, the commons hath he pilled with grievous taxes, and quite lost their hearts. The nobles hath he fined for ancient quarrels, and quite lost their hearts. And so the thing is, Richard is out collecting money, and the same thing is going on in this country. Is, again, it's I'm not a real political person, but I can see, what has happened to my mortgage because of increased taxation. And we can look at our food bills and realize we don't get as much as we used to. Now, thankfully, all of our daughters, and they are all married to wonderful son-in-laws, and they all have good jobs. And so, if we really needed food, we'd just go over and rob it out of their refrigerators. They all live close too, by the way, which is nice. but anyway, the nobleman Ross says, this is horrible. Richard's taxation, it's he's losing their hearts. And Willoughby says, and daily new exactions are devised as blanks, meaning the blank charters, benevolence, and I what not what, but what a God's name, and doth become of this. So here we're going to be, we're being introduced to Northumberland. And like I said, he's going to really, really show up in Henry IV. All right, Northumberland goes on, wars hath not wasted it, for war he hath not, but basely yielded upon compromise that which his noble ancestors achieved with blows. More hath he spent in peace than they in wars. And so these guys are really, talking things up, and they really are seeing what's going on. Now, I wanted to... We did cover page 35. We covered page 36, where York was told that Richard told York that he's going to take the Bolingbroke estate. Of course, then York exploded over that, and of course Richard didn't listen. But the noblemen that were around there to hear it, they are exploding over it. So let's just finish this. We're on page 39. Let's go to the very bottom of the page. There's Northumberland there. It says, "Not so, even though the hollow eyes of death, I spy life peering, but I dare not say how near the tidings of our comfort is." Willoughby then says, "Nay, let us share thy thoughts as thou dost ours." So even Northumberland is afraid to expose all of his thinking. And it seems like there was a period of time when nobody would trust anybody. And that's even though these are other noblemen know Northumberland, he's still afraid of, you know, to speak his full mind. And then Ross says to him, "Be confident to speak, Northumberland. We three are but thyself, and speaking so, thy words are but as thoughts. Therefore be bold." And then Northumberland says, "Then thus, I have from Le Port Blanc, a bay in Britain, received intelligence that Harry Duke of Hereford, Reynold Lord Colben, the son of Richard Earl of Arundel, the late broke from the Duke of Exeter, his brother, Archbishop late of Canterbury, Sir Thomas Eppingham, Sir John Ramsden, Sir John Norby, Sir Robert Waterton, and Francis Coynt, all these well furnished by the Duke of Bretagne, with atoll ships, 3,000 men of more, are making hither with all due expedience, and shortly mean to touch our northern shore. Perhaps they had ere this, but that they stay the first departing of the king for Ireland. If then we shall take off our slavish yoke, imp out our drooping country's broken wing," and that's, they're referring to the king. He's now the broken wing. And he said, "redeem from broken pawn the blemished crown, wipe off the dust that hides our scepter's guilt, and make High Majesty look like itself. Away with me in post to Ravenspur, but if you faint as fearing to do so, stay and be secret, and myself will go." So essentially Northumberland is saying the plan is already in force, that they're bringing Henry back, or Harry, we could call him Harry. And then Ross says, "To horse, urge doubts to them that fear." And Willoughby says, "Hold up my horse, and I will first be there." And so again, here's Act Two, where we're still in, now ready to get into Scene Two. So we're Act Two, Scene One. So we finished that. But now, in Act Two, Scene Two, but here is the Queen, and there's Bushy, and there's Bagot. And so they are now at Windsor Castle. And so you can see that the Queen is now having a meeting herself with Bushy and Bagot, and the King doesn't seem to be anywhere near. But Bushy says, "Madam, your Majesty is too much sad. You promised when you parted with the King to lay aside life-harming heaviness and entertain a cheerful disposition." And so here the Queen is really upset. She's not happy. And there's Bushy and Bagot, they're his two friends. And the Queen, they're there and they see this. And the Queen says, "To please the King, I did to please myself. I cannot do it. Yet I know no cause why I should welcome such a guest as grief, say bidding farewell to so sweet a guest as my sweet Richard. Yet again, methinks, some unborn sorrow, ripe in fortune's womb, is coming towards me, and my inward soul with nothing trembles, as something it grieves more than the parting from my lord the king." And so essentially, you know, the king has gone off. He's on his way to Ireland. Of course, the queen doesn't go with him. And Bushy and Bagot are still behind. And of course, she is really concerned about the king. But if you look at what she says here, and this is a line, starting with line, he says, "Yet again, methinks, some unborn sorrow, ripe in fortune's womb, is coming towards me, and my inward soul with nothing trembles, as something it grieves, more than with a parting from my lord the king." So in some ways, this is a premonition or a prophecy, but she believes something dastardly is going to happen to King Richard, and she's concerned. And she's wondering, you know, why is he doing all this? Then Bushy says to her, each substance of a grief hath 20 shadows, which shows the grief itself, but is not so. For sorrow's eye, glazed with blinding tears, divides one thing entire to many objects. And so he goes on to say, like perspectives, which rightly gazed upon, show nothing but confusion, eyed awry, distinguished form. So your sweet majesty, looking awry upon your lord's departure, find shapes of grief more than himself to wail, which looked on as it is not but shadows of what it is not. Then thrice gracious queen, more than your lord's departure, weep not, more's not seen. For if it be, 'tis with false sorrow's eye, which for things true weeps, things imaginary. So if you look at it, here's Bushy and Bagot are really trying to uplift the queen, and it's almost very similar to John of Gaunt trying to uplift his son Bolingbroke. He said, okay, quit crying, put your mind somewhere else. So the queen then responds that maybe so, but yet my inward soul persuades me it is otherwise. However it be, I cannot but be sad, so heavy sad, as though on thinking on no thought I think, makes me with heavy nothing faint and shrink. So then Bushy says, 'tis nothing but conceit, or it could be also imagination, my gracious lady. And the queen says, 'tis nothing less. Imagination is still derived from some forefather grief. Mine is not so, for nothing hath begot my something grief, or something hath the nothing that I grieve. 'Tis in reversion that I do possess. But what it is, this is not yet known. What I cannot name, 'tis nameless woe I wot.'" And so then Grimm comes in, and he starts talking. He says, "God save your majesty, and well met, gentlemen. I hope the king is not yet shipped for Ireland." And the queen says, "Why hopes thou so? 'Tis better hope he is, for his designs crave haste, his haste good hope. Then wherefore dost thou hope he is not shipped?" And Green says, "That he our hope might have retired his power, and driven into despair an enemy's hope, who strongly hath set footing in this land. The banished Bolingbroke repeals himself, and with uplifted arm is safe to arrive at Ravenspur." And so here's the big deal. So this is what she sensed in the background. There's something going on, and here Bolingbroke is back at Ravenspur. And the queen says, "Now God in heaven forbid." And remember now, the king is in Ireland. He's gone. And then the green says, "Ah, madam, 'tis too true, and that is worse. The Northumberland, his young son Henry Percy, the lords of Ross, Beaumont, and Willingly, with all their powerful friends, are fled to him." So already the king is not there. It happened very quickly. The queen is there with his friends, and everybody is supporting bringing Bolingbroke back. And so this is not good. And remember now, these are the great, that when you look at Northumberland and Ross and Beaumont and Willoughby, they're all North Englanders. There was probably disagreement with the king, even from them. Then Bushy says, "Why have you not proclaimed Northumberland and all the rest revolted faction traitors?" And then Green says, "We have, whereupon the Earl of Worcester hath broken his staff, resigned his steward, and all the household servants fled with him to Bolingbroke." So here the Earl of Worcester is Northumberland's brother. And he's resigned his stewardship in the government, broke his staff, and they've all fled. They've all fled to Bolingbroke. So essentially, the revolt of Bolingbroke has begun. And the king is hardly gone, you know, for just a short time. So in some ways, it's too bad because the queen is now stuck with it all. He says, "So Green, thou art the midwife to my woe, and Bolingbroke my sorrow's dismal heir. Now hath my soul brought forth her prodigy, and I, a gasping new delivered mother, have woe to woe, sorrow to sorrow joined." And then Bushy says, "Come on, despair not, madam." And then the queen says, "Who shall hinder me? I will despair and be at enmity with cozening hope. He is a flatterer, a parasite, a keeper back of death, who gently would dissolve the bands of life, which false hope lingers in extremity." Now, guess who comes in the scene? York. He goes back. And then the queen says, "Here comes the Duke of York." And then, the green says that. And then the queen says, "With signs of war about his aged neck, oh, full of careful business are his looks. Uncle, for God's sake, speak comfortable words." And York says, "Should I do so? I should belie my thoughts. Comfort's in heaven, and we are on earth. We're nothing lives but, I think it's obstacles instead of crosses. It should be obstacles, cares, and grief. Your husband, he has gone to save far off, while others come to make him lose at home. Here I am left to underprop his land, who weak with age cannot support myself. Now comes a sick hour that his excess made. Now shall they try his friends that flattered him." And so here York again. He's stuck, just like Gaunt was stuck. He's stuck now. And everything he prophesied, everything he said was going to happen, has happened. So then the serving man comes in and says, "My lord, your son was gone before I came." "He was. Why? So go all which way it will. The nobles are fled, the commons they are cold, and will, I fear, revolt on Hereford's side. Sirrah, get thee to Plashy to my sister Gloucester. Bid her send me presently 1,000 pound. Hold, take my ring. And my lord, I had forgot to tell your lordship today as I came by, I called there, but I shall grieve you to report the rest." "What is it, knave?" he says. "An hour before I came, the Duchess died." So here, this is all these things are happening at one time. And generally that's what happens when problems start. They all start it together. So essentially, York says, "God for his mercy, what a tide of woes comes rushing on this woeful land at once. I know not what to do. I would to God say my untruth, and I provoked him to it." So remember now, York is now the governor. He's standing governor, and of course, all these problems are dumped on him. It says, "The king has cut off my head with my brothers. What are these? No post dispatch for Ireland. How shall we do for money for these wars? Come, sister, cousin, I would say, pray pardon me. Go, fellow, get thee home, provide some carts, and bring away the armor that is there." So the serving man goes off to, he's following what York wants. "Gentlemen, will you go muster men? If I know how or which way to order these affairs, thus disorderly thrust into my hands, never believe me, both are my kinsmen. The one is my sovereign, whom both my oath and duty bids defend. The other again is my kinsman, whom the king hath wronged, who conscious my kindred bids to right. Well, somewhat we must do. Come, cousin, I'll dispose of you." And it says, "Gentlemen, go muster up your men, and meet me presently at Berkeley. I should, it's too plashy too, but time will not permit. All is uneven, and everything is left at 6 and 7. And essentially, that's an interesting statement there. Everything is left at 6 and 7, and all that means is everything's in confusion. Everything's left at 6 and 7. So then off the stage goes the Duke of York, the Queen, Manamet, Bushy, Bagot, and Green. They're off stage, and then Bushy says, "The wind sits fair for news to go for Ireland, but none returns. For us to levy power proportionable to the enemy is all impossible." Green then says, "Besides, our nearness to the king in love is near the hate of those love not the king." So if you look at it now, you can almost see that Bushy, Green, and Bagot are saying, maybe it's time to dump the king, because they're going to be in trouble too. Bushy then says, "Wherein the king stands, generally condemned. Bagot, if judgment lies in them, then so do we, because we have ever been near the king." Green says, "Well, I will for refuge straight to Bristol Castle. The Earl of Wiltshire is already there." Bushy says, "Thither I with you, for little office will the hateful commons perform for us, except like curs to tear us all to pieces. Will you go along with us?" Bagot says, "No, I will to Ireland, to his majesty. Farewell, if heart's presages be not vain. We three here part that never shall meet again." So they realize gig is up, or the jig is up. They're all in big trouble. They know that they're facing assassination. And so it's really a tough situation. Green says, "Alas, poor Duke, the task he undertakes is numbing sands and drinking oceans dry. Where one on his side fights, thousands will fly. Farewell at once for all and ever." And then Bushy says, "Well, we may meet again." And Bagot says, "I fear me never." And so there we have it. We've got to Act 2, Scene 3. And the big fear has happened. Bolingbroke has returned. He's got an army supporting him. And everybody with King Richard is in big trouble. All right. So that's all the time we have for today. Next time, we will continue discussing Richard II, Act 2. We're going to get into Scene 3, excuse me. And Act 3 is another key moment of the play. And so we'll talk about that next time. Now, you may be able to find a good Pelican copy of King Richard at Amazon. You can also locate a new Pelican copy priced about $8 or $9. And you may also be able to find a good used copy of David Starkey's Crown and Country at Amazon. Remember, that's a great book. And now that we're back into all Shakespeare's plays, we'll probably be using that book as well. So thanks for joining me next time as we advance our royal education.
You've been listening to Shakespeare's Royal Education on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.